Here's Field Yates from the NFL and ESPN. What's up, Field? How you doing, man?
Hey, guys. How are you?
Oh, we're doing well. We just saw the report earlier this hour, and it's been out there for a bit, but I think Schefter was tweeting that the NFL, with camps opening up sooner than later, they're not going to have 90 guys at the camp. It may be 80, it might be 70, but they're gonna cut that down. They're likely going to cut down exhibition games. At this point, they're probably down to two. I think Trey Wingo said on ESPN Radio today he wouldn't be shocked if they didn't play any exhibition games. So what are you bracing yourself for, Field, in terms of this preseason and camps and how unique and how different this is going to look?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot different, and that applies to all sports, obviously. The reason why we're talking about football in this particular light is that, unlike hockey and basketball specifically, which were already in the middle of their season, football is dealing with this at the outset of their season. And beyond that, football is different than a lot of other sports because of the number of people involved and the physical contact involved. Obviously, when you're playing with 90 players or up to 90 players, that's more bodies you got to accommodate. And unlike baseball and football, you've got to, every single play, make contact with each other. But I'm not totally surprised by the latest news from Adam Schefter. The NFL teams are not going to have a total of 90 players at training camp. If you just sort of do things logically, you know, the best way to, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, there's going to be risk involved no matter what, but the fewer people you have around, the better chance you have to not shut out the virus, but have some level of maintaining it, or at least being able to handle whatever circumstances come your way as a result of it. So it's going to look a lot different in training camp this year, and I think the first step is not just eliminating two preseason games, but also potentially reducing the number of players each roster has at its disposal.
So the hot news, obviously, Field, is circulating around the New England Patriots and the signing of Cam Newton. Newton today, I guess, did some media availability, and the quote that really caught my eye was the one about the contract he signed, which, of course, only guarantees him a little more than $500,000. Has an upside of, you know, a lot more than that, something like $7.5 million. But he says, and I quote, "This is not about money for me. This is about respect." What do you make of that?
Yeah, so it actually was Cam posting to his own Instagram. And, you know, I think that, and we see athletes all the time, basically for as long as they can, cash in on whatever opportunity they have financially. And I 100% respect that, right? Like, we live in a capitalist society, and these guys should have the opportunity to make as much money as they want, given how short their careers are. But for Cam, who has $122 million already in the bank, and a player who's made a ton of money off the field because he's so charismatic and marketable, he really is, in some circles, iconic. Because of those factors, Cam doesn't need to worry about making as much money as possible. And the other reality is that Cam didn't have a lot of suitors. As Adam Schefter has reported, it was basically Patriots or bust right now. And things could have changed, you know, maybe a team had an injury at quarterback. But if you're Cam, the question becomes, do you take the bird in hand, which happens to be the most successful franchise in professional sports over the last 20 years, who have an obvious need at quarterback, who have the greatest coach of all time, and a place for you to go and further cement your legacy? And I think Cam is looking at this opportunity as basically as perfect as it can get for June 28th, which is when the news initially broke. There weren't going to be a lot of better opportunities between then and whenever training camps begin, which for now are scheduled to begin on July 28th.
We're chatting with Field Yates from ESPN. I saw Damian Woody say earlier today, or he used a comparison, that Baker Mayfield at the end of this year could be in Mitchell Trubisky's territory or shoes, so to speak. And I totally agree with that. I mean, they're both top-end picks. Yeah, Baker went one, but Trubisky went two. It's not like Trubisky was a third-round pick on the cheap that had to buy his time. As a result, you know, the front office commits, the ownership commits. I think they get even more leeway. But the Bears finally said, that's enough. We need to bring in legitimate competition. And I think Foles is probably going to start for them. So Trubisky's chasing it. Where do you stand on that, Field? If Baker has another year like he did last year, why would anyone believe the Browns are going to continue to commit to him in the future?
I 100% agree with Damian. And here's the reason why. You alluded to some of it, but, you know, the Browns have a decision they're going to have to make next offseason on the fifth-year option for Baker Mayfield, which is for the 2022 league year. So I know we're way, way far in advance, but starting next year, that fifth-year option for players is fully guaranteed the minute you pick it up. So if the Browns pick up that fifth-year option for Baker Mayfield after a substandard year, they're basically going to be saying, you know what, you weren't very good, but you're still worth upwards of probably somewhere in the neighborhood of $25 to $27 million to us for 2022. And, you know, that's just not a commitment you should be willing to make unless you are absolutely certain about a player. And I think Baker's first 2 years were more impressive than Mitch's in aggregate. Mitch had one good year his second season. Baker was much better as a rookie, and I think I believe in Baker more than I do in Mitch. But, you know, some notes to sort of add and fold into this mix is that, again, to cite Adam Schefter, on Monday morning, his podcast, he talked about how there was one other team that called Cam Newton, and that was the Cleveland Browns. So that means this offseason, the Browns signed Case Keenum to an $18 million deal over three seasons, and they called on Cam Newton. I'm not saying they're trying to replace Baker Mayfield right now, guys, but do you think, you know, insert other team here, do you think the New York Giants with Daniel Jones, do you think that other teams who have a young quarterback called on Cam Newton? And the answer is no. The Browns were the only one to do so. And to me, I thought that was sort of an indicator that, you know, I'm not saying Baker's on thin ice, not saying this can't be resurrected, but he better get it going soon.
The other guy, obviously, who's been a big part of the story of the summer in terms of quarterbacks field is a guy who hasn't played in the NFL in about 4 years, Colin Kaepernick. Any buzz around that is, in terms of his level of desire to actually get back to football, as so many seem to want him to do, and, of course, the league's desire to have him around in some capacity?
Yeah, so let's start with how the narrative has shifted, because I think we all agree. There's not much that we can agree on in football often, but we can agree that the narrative has shifted, right? I mean, there was a time, I mean, I'm on record, I could probably find an old radio interview like from like 6 months ago where I said, or I would have said definitively, I don't think Colin Kaepernick is going to ever be back in the NFL. I felt like the ship had sailed because I felt like there is a certain welcoming from the NFL that I did not believe in at the time. I feel like that's changed now, and I would think a lot of people feel that way, that it just seems to be that most, you know, there's been more addressing of Colin publicly from people in positions of authority. We've heard of some coaches such as Anthony Lynn saying, you know, I think he's going to be on our workout list. We've heard from other coaches like Pete Carroll say that, you know, he had teams calling him, asking for more information about Colin Kaepernick. They had, of course, tried to arrange a workout a couple of years ago. So I'm certainly not guaranteeing anything. But I do think the Colin Kaepernick conversation has had some life breathed into it. And I think there's at least a chance that he is back on an NFL roster at some point in the fall.
Using that as a leapfrog into a different player who's currently on the outside and I think looking to get back in would be Antonio Brown. And videos circulating over the past couple of days of him working out with Russell Wilson. And to no one's surprise, Brown looks outstanding. Like the guy's, you know, one of the great route runners of all time, and he can catch everything. He's in shape. And Wilson, there have been reports, you know, there's been a lot of smoke out there that he has not loved the fact that Pete Carroll hasn't hooked him up with enough weapons. And Russ is in his prime. That team is always a playoff team or a contending team. I mean, they almost won the division over the Niners last year. So can you see that happening, Field? Could you see Antonio Brown back in the NFL? And if so, would it make sense for him to end up in Seattle?
And I've kind of learned my lesson with Antonio Brown in this way, guys. If I could see it, could definitely see it happening somewhere, anywhere. But there's so many hurdles that Antonio Brown himself has to clear before we even have that conversation. So Antonio Brown has got to show much more accountability. And I know that's kind of a difficult thing to do when he's not on a roster. Like, it's difficult to show that you can be a competent teammate when you don't even have teammates. But that's like that. Antonio Brown lost that privilege through his previous behavior. I think the NFL has to rule on Antonio Brown and a potential suspension before we talk about this more seriously. You'd like to know what you're dealing with if you're a team. And I think that there's a little bit more acceptance publicly if you know Antonio Brown has to serve, let's just say, a four-game suspension. I'm just using that hypothetically. I think people might be a little bit more accepting of, all right, if you're signing him, you know that you're not going to have him for four games, but you're going to work to help Antonio Brown get back on the straight and narrow because, I mean, as you just said, the talent is ridiculous. We're talking about a guy who has basically unparalleled production, one of the great receivers we've ever seen play. He might be the most talented wide receiver on earth during a time where we've got Michael Thomas at the peak of his powers, and Julio Jones, and Mike Evans, and Chris Godwin, DeAndre Hopkins, all these great players. So Antonio Brown could be back on a roster, but for now, I don't think anybody should be making any assurances, including Antonio Brown himself.
Yeah, that's probably wise, but you know, we'll see. I'm sure they're dreaming about it out in Seattle. If you're a Seahawk fan, you quickly move past any issues and any concerns once you start seeing them catch balls from Russ. Always great catching up with you. Thank you for doing this, Field.
All right, guys. Have a great day and a great weekend ahead.
Yeah, you too. Field Yates from ESPN. I don't know if you saw that video, but again, it's not surprising. Like, Russell Wilson's throwing dimes like you would expect, and Antonio Brown looks unbelievable.
Well, how about every quarterback that doesn't feel like he's got enough weapons is looking at that video saying to their GM, hey, what about that guy? I'm sure, you know, the football helmet in your backdrop there, Hayes. I'm sure the guy that wears that, number 12 for the Packers, is probably saying, wait a second, I don't have anybody with that kind of talent on my roster.
Yep. That's it. You don't even have to concern yourself with taking a quarterback in the first round. If you sign Antonio Brown,
right,
and he's healthy and he's willing to commit, which are two big, I mean, the health is not a concern, although he is into his 30s, but willing to commit is a complete wild card.
And how do you know?
How would you possibly know? And how do you know he's not going to show up and try to ruin everything like he did in Oakland? That's a remote possibility, by all means. But if he is committed and he's willing to perform, he's a beast. Like, he still would be, I think, a top 5 or 10 wideout in the game. So I could see, that's why Brady wanted him. That's why Russell Wilson, I'm sure, would be wanting
him. Well, smart move by Russ, too, because if you can convince your organization that you're the AB whisperer, right? Like, you've got the keys to unlock that mercurial mind that can, you know, go both ways, right? Can be an absolute force, be a dominant player, and also can be a guy who absolutely destroys your clubhouse chemistry. I mean, if you can be Russ Wilson and say, hey, Pete Carroll, I know how to speak to this guy. I know how to get this guy to buy in. I've been working out with him. Maybe you can make the case, right?
No, I'm sure that's what he's doing. I'd be shocked if he wasn't. That's what Brady was doing. That's why Brady was like, here, you can stay at my house.
Yeah.
Because I'm sure he was convincing Belichick, this is what we need. And we've named three stud all-time Hall of Fame quarterbacks that have been in the same spot the past year. Aaron Rodgers, who has not been connected to Brown, but clearly wants more weapons and feels like he's been slighted by his organization.
Oh, yeah.
Brady felt the same way last year, didn't have enough weapons, and Russell Wilson feels the same way in Seattle. He doesn't feel like they've put the necessary weapons around him. So these guys are in their primes. They got a ton of leverage, a ton of power, and they're pushing. And I would think that's what's happening with Russ in Seattle.